Good evening, one and all. Welcome along. It is season 5, episode 33 of the UK Dallas Cowboys podcasts. And as you can see,
if anyone who actually is listening to the show, we do have a beautiful graphic of the Philadelphia Eagles known as frauds. So,
yes. And sitting in a dumpster as well. So,
yep. Serves them right for talking all that smack.
Yep.
But, gentlemen, what gave you more pleasure Sunday night? Winning the NFC or the trash talking that went on afterwards?
Oh, can you not just have both? like the NFC title, absolutely fantastic. We've now secured home field advantage. We're the number 2 seed. If we win this game against Green Bay, we get another home game, which is great. And just to add to the misery of the Eagles, like they lost like really pretty bad to the Giants.
Yeah.
That fact. I did say weeks ago that there would have been one game where the Giants would have won and beat them the way how their downfall is, but I did not expect the Arizona game last week. But that was the best gift of all when Arizona beat them. That was the best gift of all.
Yeah, it meant that, you know, we were in the driving seat last weekend, obviously, and, you know, you had all the grandstanding from Sirianni say, no, I'm not, you know, we're not going to play our guys unless it looks like the Cowboys are losing and all that sort of stuff. But
well, what will happen to them? Hurts picked up an injury. AJ yep. Brown picked up an injury. Devonta Smith picked up an injury.
Yeah,
and then you look at the Lions as well. The Lions obviously were playing for the fact that
like Sam Laporte. What the hell?
I know. Yeah. Why are you going to waste him? Although they're, you know, Dan Campbell's been his usual positive self and saying it's day to day. It's certainly not as bad as it could have been. But you know, he's still saying there's a chance. But it just, all of our Christmases came at once, I think. So,
Lauren, all I could think of when you said there's a chance was the Dumb and Dumber gif.
Yep. So you're saying there's a chance.
Yes, absolutely. But look, most importantly, as we say, on Sunday night, the Cowboys went out and took care of business at FedEx Field against the Washington Commanders. They won 38-10. We've won the NFC East. Again, Lauren, as you've said, what, the NFC East hasn't been retained in 19 years at this point in time.
Yep. I think the last one was the 2003-2004 Eagles to do the back-to-back. In fact, I think they had 2 or 3 years running straight. But, I mean, those were the days of Quincy Carter, so they were pretty dark for the Cowboys fans.
Yeah. And as you alluded to, Paul, we do have the number 2 seed in the NFC. I'll just correct my spelling there, but we do have the number 2 seed in the NFC, as you say. And that does get us home field advantage if we can get over the Green Bay Packers on Sunday night.
Yep.
Well, you know that we've now got, we know that there's going to be the UK Cowboys flag is going to be in the stadium.
I know. Our very own Graham is going to be in the house along with his dad, who is a Packers fan. So father and son are going to be having a lot of bickering at the game.
I wonder will Lebarski be checking in tonight?
Yeah, I wonder, Lebarski, are you flying out?
We'll have to have words with Lebarski when he gets logged in later on this evening. But look, gents, give me your initial thoughts on the game anyway before we kind of delve deep into things.
Dak Prescott MVP. That's basically the headline for me in terms of this game. Like, you can say whatever you want about Washington or whatever or not, but the numbers don't lie. 279 yards passing, 4 touchdowns, 1 interception. Like, and he was spot on, 100% record with CeeDee Lamb, 13 catches out of 13. He was phenomenal, no sacks. He was just playing it on a whole different level. If he can play like that going into the playoffs, man. But when you really look at the whole MVP talk and stuff like that, it's either going to be him or Lamar Jackson. I'm sorry, but Dax proved more to me anyway. I'm not trying to be favoritism or anything like that. And I'm not trying to discredit Lamar Jackson anyway. Great player, yeah, 100%. But without Dak, this ship would sink.
Yeah, completely agree. You know, there is a case for Dak Prescott being, and you know, obviously they're saying that, Lamar Jackson's stats are all skewed because he didn't play that last game there. But if you think of the number of games this season where Dak's actually been taken out midway through the third quarter and he's still got those statistics, and even the interception that he threw on a Sunday night there wasn't his fault. It got tipped at the line of scrimmage. So it wasn't a bad decision by him as such.
Yep.
It was more a case of the guy getting his... And, you saw there was plenty of tip passes, block punts, block field goals. Everything was happening in that game. And it's probably, as we were saying when Aubrey missed the kick, it's best to get it out of the way now than... doing a Gary Anderson in the 1998 NFC Championship game.
Yeah.
We're running before we actually get there. There's still work to be done. We need to get to the NFC Championship game anyway.
Yeah.
But you certainly don't want in this first miss coming in a game situation like that. So.
Yeah. Just to add on top of it, like the Dak's interception, he stuck to his promise from the very start of the season, and everybody laughed at him. He would get less than 10 interceptions this season. And he did it. He proved everyone wrong. Everyone. Mm-hmm. Even ourselves. He proved us wrong. He proved everyone wrong to say, no, my goal is to get as less turnovers this year.
Yeah.
Everybody laughed. They had like fools like LeSean McCoy and Joy Taylor laughing at it, saying, yeah, I don't believe him. He's talking porky pies pretty much, but... No, that was a man of his word. He was out there to play really good, efficient football. Yeah, he's had some couple of bad games against San Francisco and Arizona. Yeah, that's fair enough. But in terms of the whole overall year, the games that he's performed in, like the demolition of the Jets, the demolition of the Giants, like all the home games that we've played, don't get me wrong, some of them have been really close calls, but overall, he's leading the NFL in touchdown passes. Leads the NFL.
Yep.
And if you look at it, so for anyone who's listening in, the comment here from DJ Dog, and I think it absolutely sums things up. He said, Dak has put this team on his shoulders, and specifically, we don't beat the Lions, the Seahawks, or that team without him.
Yeah, I completely agree. I mean, the performance that he's put in, I mean, yes, okay, you can say CD Lamb's developed as well. You know, there was still question marks this year about whether he'd be able to live up to the number 88. But, he's more than surpassed that. But ultimately, this team was always going to ride on Dak Prescott, making, correct reads, being efficient with the ball and not making those turnovers. And even that, even this year, again, quick touch wood, but he's not had fumble issues that he has in previous years as well. There's been very few fumbles that he's had this year. So, he really has put the work into his game, and we're seeing the benefits now. So I would certainly be jumping up and down on the table saying that he should be the MVP.
Yeah. And I mean, if you look at the stats, and Paul, you alluded to them there a couple of minutes ago, but I mean, his passer rating is over 100. His quarterback rating is over 70 on average across the season. He's thrown the most touchdowns. His interception numbers are lower than most other quarterbacks. There's most other numbers are lower are higher where they need to be and lower where they need to be than Lamar Jackson.
Yeah, definitely. And we just noticed our friend Joe is on the show here. We just want to kind of give a wee disclaimer at the moment. We've had a wee issue with our Facebook page at the moment. So currently just now, if you're trying to watch this via a Facebook, you won't be able to at the moment. So be sure to come along to our YouTube channel and just hit the like and subscribe from there. And that's where you will get to see it, or via a Twitter as well. So we are having issues with our Facebook, and we hope to get that resolved as soon as possible.
Yeah. But going back to what we were discussing there, Paul, in terms of Dak and the numbers and that, I mean, you know, like, as great a football player as Lamar Jackson is, and I'm going to say this quite honestly, he's surpassed my expectations. I didn't think he was going to be suited to the NFL, and he has.
Yeah, I think he surpassed quite a lot of people, to be fair. I mean, I didn't really know much about Lamar Jackson going into the draft, really, to be honest. And I thought, must have been a bit of a reach or something like that from the Ravens and that, like, all this talk about him, etc. And I'm just like, but no, he's definitely, like, the problem is with Lamar Jackson, though, how long do we see the slowness of being a running-style quarterback to fall down on its knees? It's happened with every single one of them. If you're that type of quarterback, like your RG3, even Kyron Murray's slowing down a little bit, Cam Newton, all these type of quarterbacks, they have a shorter longevity period in the NFL. So that's the thing with Lamar. I do have a concern with Lamar Jackson.
I do to some extent as well. But then, you know, his numbers are certainly down on previous years in terms of his rushing. You know, obviously, second and third year in the league, he was over 1,000 yards, and it's come down since then, and he's roughly about the 750 to 800 mark. But what you've really seen this year is, you know, his career high this year for passing yards in the season, attempts, you know, everything like that. I mean, earlier on in the career, I would say that he would have tucked the ball and run with it 9 times out of 10. This time he's actually holding on to the ball and finding receivers. And you only had to look at it in that game in week 17 where he threw 5 touchdown passes, 158.3 passer rating and all that.
Yeah.
You know, that he is a different quarterback now. He's still, don't get me wrong, he's still got the ability to scramble and, you know, sure enough, at some, as you say, Paul, at some point he will scramble and somebody will take him down and cut his legs from under him or whatever. And that's,
and I hope that's not. I hope that's not the case, because from a fan's perspective, I do enjoy watching him play. He is really exciting, but when you're trying to compare him to, like, what Dak is doing right now, like, if anything, if there's a comeback player of the year as well, Dak should be up for that as well, because the way how he's, this is without a doubt his best season. He's had don't get me wrong, he still managed to make the playoffs, like in multiple teams in the past two, like some seasons under Mike McCarthy and stuff like that. We've all had winning records and that, but it's below par from his standards. This is the one where he's actually went above and beyond his standards.
Yeah.
Yep. Completely agree.
So one of the other things, obviously, from the game on Sunday, Tyler Smith didn't travel to Washington, obviously, with the torn plantar fascia injury. Zach Martin also got sick on Saturday night and sat out the game, rightly so, too. So we had an offensive line of Tyron Smith, TJ Bass, Tyler Biadasz, Brock Hoffman.
Hoffman had a great game. I thought Hoffman had a great game.
He did. Yeah. Well, I mean, Dak didn't get sacked, didn't, you know, wasn't pressured at all, really. You know, I don't think Dak actually had much scrambling yardage or anything like that, which suggests that he's not having to move around in the pocket that much. And you saw it a couple of times where, you know, after the play, and Commanders defensive linemen are walking back to the huddle and they're purposely bashing off Hoffman and, you know, pushing them over, trying to noise him up, and he just wasn't having any of it. So, yeah. And if you think as well, he's primarily been the backup centre to Biadasz as well. So to ask him to step in with an hour and a half to go, because they were still planning on Zach Martin playing the game until about an hour and a half to go, and it just apparently Zach Martin didn't get off the bus. He just sat on the bus the whole game, you know, and just looked. I think Nick Eatman said he looked green for most of the game, you know. So Hoffman did really well to come on, and you know, again, it just shows that, you know, in previous years, something like this probably would have made us fold. And it's not this year. We've lifted the curse by putting Jimmy Johnson in the Ring of Honor. Now we've got to just exorcise the demons.
Absolutely. And Brian, just
I'm loving your background, Paul.
Brian, you're still on mute.
Sorry about that. I said, you can see here from DJ Dog's comment, he said Hoffman did really well. Need to watch the unnecessary roughness penalties. He's a hothead and plays on the edge. And I don't know if it was just me, Lauren, and I'm directing this one at you because I know you would have seen this guy play, but was there a bit of a Mark 2A about him?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, all of those guys of the 1980s were, you know, Nate Newton was a cast off from the USFL, originally drafted by the Redskins, went to USFL, USFL folded. We were his last chance, effectively. And he didn't really settle in much with Tom Landry. Jimmy Johnson comes in and goes, "You're fat," you know. Had him running on the asthma field and all that sort of stuff. And, you know, but he knuckled down after that and became the 6-time Pro Bowler that he is.
When you really think about it, Lauren, that whole offensive line back in the 90s were a bunch of low-end picks and undrafted free agents way back in the day. Like, yeah, and I mean, they were, without a doubt, one of the best offensive lines ever as a dynasty. Really,
yeah, I mean,
from Stepnowski, Tuohy, you can even, well, the only one that's really big up there is a Big Larry. So
Larry Allen. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. So he was the biggest addition, like, to that offensive line, and obviously he was great in that. But the Gogan, Stepnowski, and etc. Tuohy, man,
Eric was on.
Eric, there you go.
Eric Williams. If only he hadn't got in that car accident and wrapped his car around the tree, that would have been, you'd have been talking about him being the best ever. You know, it would be up there with Tyron Smith as to who was the best offensive tackle for the Cowboys.
For sure. I'm going to bring it up here. DJ Dog has just put this in, and I know this is a guy you both love talking about. Hunter Lupke did well as a blocking fullback in the split formation with Dak under center.
Yeah, completely agree with that. In fact, whether it seems strange as well when you're talking about starting two rookie offensive linemen as well, but you know, there was actually a running game in this game as well. You know, Tony Pollard went over 1,000 yards for the season. You got good running out of Dowdle as well. And, you know, Lupke was certainly putting in the blocks to spring these guys open as well. So it was a good performance all round by the running game, and obviously gives you hope for going forward. So,
yeah. Just a comment here from Joe in terms of, he said, Dak and CeeDee Lamb did all this after the fourth game. Can you imagine if Dak was getting touchdowns from game one? And I mean, I think that's very fair. Like, obviously, the first three games of the season, and obviously that 49ers game being the outlier thereafter, it really was about betting in that Tex Coast offense for this team.
Yeah, but it also, I mean, fair play to Dak as well. Dak went in, he didn't play the petulant child, but he went in and had a face-to-face with Mike McCarthy and said, I'm not getting the ball enough. Do what you can, and I'll show you what you can do with it. And since that 49ers game, you know, CDE has been on an absolute tear. And, you know, finishing second in yards to Tyreek Hill. You know, imagine if he'd hit the ground running this year. From the get-go. I mean, you'd probably be talking that CD Lamb was on course for a 2,000-yard season. You know, and he'd be staking a claim for the MVP award as well. So,
yeah, for sure. Look, obviously the off-season is now in effect for those teams who were eliminated on Sunday. And it is at that time of the season where offensive coordinators, defensive coordinators are getting interviews or being invited to come forward. Obviously, our own Dan Quinn has been invited for 3 head coaching interviews already.
Yep.
Same old crap every year, I'm telling you.
I have to agree. I mean, Dan Quinn said last year he wants to stay in Dallas and bring Dallas a Super Bowl. Well, the job isn't finished yet, so sorry, you got to carry on. by all means, entertain the offers, but you're staying here.
Yeah. And, of course, our own Will McClay has also been brought forward for 2 interviews for general manager positions. I think it's with the Chargers and with the Commanders. Sorry, it's the Panthers and the Commanders, is it?
I think he's also been because the Commanders have obviously brought in their
NBA team,
or they've brought him in as general manager. But I think there was talk of it being I think there's still talks that they're wanting to talk to McClay as well. But let me just double check that.
Yeah, It would be improper of us not to mention the fact that Kellen Moore has got an interview for the head coaching job at the LA Chargers.
Oh, has he? Yeah. Has he been added to the list now, has he? Right, yeah. Okay.
That's come out in the last half hour.
And apparently that Fabo from the Titans has just got fired.
He got fired earlier tonight, so...
Yeah.
There is Mike Tag. There he is. Mike Tag and Kelly Canine. What's up?
Joe was just saying here, I believe Carolina will grab Dan Quinn since he knows that division pretty well. He does know pretty well, but I mean, if Jerry Jones opens the checkbook, I don't think he's going to move anywhere.
Yeah. I mean, I think Dan Quinn's enjoying the whole defensive coordinator. He doesn't want to be known as somebody like Wade Phillips, perhaps, who, you know, is a great coordinator, but, you know, doesn't do well as a head coach. And he took Atlanta to the Super Bowl. He took them to within a half of a Super Bowl, and then they crumbled for the second half. And, you know, obviously set up the game for 80 for Brady, the movie, if you've seen that. But I just can't believe that he's truly going to go somewhere at the moment, unless it is a prime position where he's got a lot of talent, a lot of draft picks. Carolina don't have many draft picks because they gave up a hell of a lot to get.
They screwed the pitch big time.
And who would have thought that Lovie Smith actually did the Houston Texans a favor last year by winning that last game of the season and knocking them out of the first pick?
Massive.
Yeah.
Who knows? They could have still went with CG Stroud for number one. They could have.
Yeah.
But it's less money in our salary cap.
What Frank Reich wanted was... Sorry, am I saying that right? It was Frank Reich, wasn't it?
Frank Reich wanted CJ Stroud.
Wanted CJ Stroud.
Yep. Or yeah, but the Tepper wanted Tepper or the general manager wanted Bryce Young.
Yeah. So you just never know what happens. Joe is being mischievous and he's saying, can you imagine if Dan Quinn got the LA Chargers job and then fired Kellen Moore?
Oh, that'd be freaking hilarious.
But the question I do want to throw to you both, and I think I'm pretty sure I know both of your answers will be, from DJ Dog, he says, question, who would be the bigger loss for us, losing Dan Quinn or losing Will McClay?
Well, I would have to go with Dan Quinn, if I'm being honest, because he's the one who's more action on the field. Like, don't get me wrong, but Will McClay, a friend of the show, he's done a fantastic job in terms of scouting talent and stuff like that, but obviously he'll have people under his wing that can actually learn from him and actually take on the job after him. But whereas Dan Quinn, there's a absolute madness to his science that cannot be replicated at all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for me, it's Quinn as well. I mean, McClay has certainly brought in talent, and you can't deny that. But, you know, talent only works within your scheme if it matches your scheme. And Dan mm-hmm. Quinn has found a way that, you know, we've had Leighton Van Der Esch go down this season. We've not been able to bring in any other linebackers that have been actually worth anything. So we've toyed with bringing guys down from the safety position to play linebacker. And we're getting star performances out of them as well. That just shows the ingenuity that Dan Quinn's got. Fair enough, it didn't work when he brought DeMonte KZ in and what have you, mm-hmm. that first season. But you can see how much of a turnaround he's had on this defense. And it's markedly better, not only from the Mike Nolan year, but, you know, the previous staff from that as well. To have this defense in the top 10 the last, or top 5, I think it is, the last 3 years, you know, just shows what Dan Quinn's done for us.
Yeah, I'm going to say I'm actually surprised, because I thought both of you were going to say Will McClay. Because I mean, I think it was Will McClay was the big advocate for Tyler Smith, who I think we all kind of had a little throw the pen at that one. I think, again, he's been the big advocate for getting Mazi Smith in last year's draft. And as you say, Lauren, it is scheme specific in terms of what you need and what you get. And then obviously you're giving them to your head coach and your coordinators to get the best out of them. So that's why I would lean towards Will McClay personally. And Joe did come back in and say, for him, it was Will McClay as well. But, I mean, I would hope we don't lose either of them in this offseason.
Agreed. I mean, I'm only saying that, you know, Will McClay only does it to the point of getting them into training camp.
Yeah.
And yeah, okay, they're still looking 365 days a year and all that. But mm-hmm. He's only bringing guys in that he reckons can fit the system. It's up to him to have the understanding of what Dan Quinn, Mike McCarthy, and all that want.
Yeah.
But ultimately, it's Dan Quinn's responsibility to use the staff that he or the players that he has, the resources that he has, to put something out on the field. And I think for that, for me, it's, you know, it's we're talking a percentage point here. 51-49,
yeah,
you know, that sort of thing.
Yeah. So just again, another point in here. And look, folks, we appreciate all the comments that you guys are getting in. You know, don't be afraid to put in comments. If we don't address them straight away, we'll try and come back to them later in the show. We do have kind of a running order on what we want to talk about. And if that ties in, we'll come back to it. But DJ Dog says, for me, it's McClay, although I want both back. With big contracts of Lamb, Prescott, and Parsons, it'll be vital in keeping the draft picks at low prices that we can actually pay. And I mean, I think that is going to be essential. And look, I do think we're going to see a little bit of wheeler dealering in this upcoming draft because we don't have as much capital. But Mark Anthony has come back in and said here, I hate talking about off-season during the active season, but I doubt seriously we'll draft any more Michigan defensive linemen.
Hey, listen, when it comes to Mazi Smith, if his name's not getting, if he's not getting blown out across the field by offensive linemen, he's doing his job right. He's still filling in the gap. Especially against the gap, who's the bloody running back again? Is it Robinson?
Brian Robinson.
Held their rushing to really quite low, I thought, in terms of the interior. Yeah. Mazi Smith did a really exceptional job against Washington. So I think just after this, I know we just kind of talked about not talking about off-season stuff, but I think with Mazi Smith going into this off-season, him coming back for next year, he'll be a much better player than he will be this rookie season. So he's slowly finding his feet.
Yep.
Yeah. And as we say, and look, we say it about most draft picks and draft positions, but defensive tackle, you do need 2 to 3 years to get yourself into that NFL shape. You will get the unicorns like an Aaron Donald every once in a generation. And, you know yourself with every draft class, oh, this is a guy's a once in a generation. Donald was that unicorn, that once in a generation defensive tackle. So, you can't lay that at the door of Mazi Smith this season, I don't think.
Yeah.
But if we, try and break it down a little bit here in terms of the offensive side of the ball, the numbers are going through. Like Dak again, 31 of 36, 279, 4 touchdowns and an interception. QBR nearly at 100, his QBR rating almost 125. I mean, we're running out of superlatives for Dak.
Yeah, I mean, the performance that he's put in this year, I mean, I think he actually finished, I think you've mixed it up. That's Cooper Rush got 95.8, Brian. Dak Prescott was 124.4 according to the game book that I've downloaded from NFL.com. So, but when you complete 80% of your passes, you've got more touchdowns, you've thrown 4 touchdowns. I mean, that suggests that you should be on the winning side. Unless you're going up against somebody like Peyton Manning in the what was it, 53-51 game, way back when. But Dak certainly took this team, things could have gone to pot when, they got through and they blocked that field goal. You could have said, "Oh, this isn't going to be our game. We're playing in Washington again," and all this sort of stuff. And that just said, "No, let's go." And from that point on, it was all us.
I'll be honest, Lauren. When that field goal happened, when the block kick happened and stuff, I was just like, I don't feel worried about this. When the switch of possession so suddenly that you would get worried that they change your momentum. I was not particularly worried at all about this game. I think it's just purely because, and this is, I suppose, the quality of the opponent is mostly down to that. But I think with everything what's at stake, I had no problem with that. I don't think we were going to choke that game at all based on that turnover.
I just thought when you looked, obviously we had one eye on the the Eagles Giants game, and you saw that the Giants had jumped out, and I thought that the Giants had started the season on being shut out, and I thought they were actually going to shut out the Eagles, and they certainly did for a half. And I just figured there was some way that it was going to end up that we were going to end up being. For even for a couple of minutes there, I thought, oh, we're just going to screw the pooch. We'll end up in the number 3 slot, You know, because that's what the Lions were looking for. If both of us lost and the Lions won as they did, then obviously they jump into two and we'd go down to three. After that blocked field goal, I thought, oh God, you know, what's going to happen? But thankfully, you know, we got it back just before the half. You know, and then we pulled away. So,
And just DJ Dog is just asking here, and guys, I didn't see this myself, or I couldn't pick it up. But who was the blocker who whiffed on the block field goal? Was that Tyler Beattish? I don't think it was Beattish.
I certainly think it was, obviously, I think not having Tyler Smith and not having Zach Martin there, I think they're still in on field goals. It wasn't it wasn't our base special teams formation. Whoever, I can't remember who it was who gave up the who gave up the pass rush, but you know, it's a one-off, and especially, you know, these sort of things happen. We certainly, you know, we started the season again. We started the season blocking the Giants. You know, there must have been something that they sort of scouted one of our guys that they said, you know, this is why it's happened. But you know, these sort of things do happen. And fair play to them, they did exactly what they needed to do. So
And I mean, you kind of alluded to it there a couple of minutes ago. Like, obviously, Washington's points came off of both turnovers in this game. The touchdown came off the miss or the blocked field goal. Their field goal then came off the interception from Dak. But I mean, apart from that, they had nothing to offer on offense, and Dak just carved them up. The offense and the offensive line were mean. They were pushing them back. And yeah, the Commanders were missing players. I think Daron Payne was out and Jonathan Allen was definitely out. Yeah. But I mean, this offense went out and did what it had to do in terms of winning the game. And, you know, Brandon Aubrey, obviously he missed a second field goal, but he got one just before the end of the match. A lot of people wanted the starters pulled at halftime, but I think this game really helped them get a bit of mojo, get a bit of a good feeling around the offense again.
Yeah, completely agree. I mean, obviously, we kept it close. Funnily enough, last Thursday, I said that the scoreline was going to be 35-10. It was that close that, you know, I was like, well, I can't see us hold. We got up with, what was it? It was something like 20 minutes left to go of game time, and I'm saying, well, no, that's my prediction screwed, because there's no way can we not score again for 20 minutes. But you know, as I said, you know, if you leave the Commanders in the game, then, you know, they'll take advantage of it. They took advantage of the opportunities they had and you saw them doing trick plays as well to try and move the ball. That shows a sign of desperation in a team wanting to go out a little bit on high, but knowing that they're underpowered, undermanned, or whatever. But you know, as soon as we got on top of them, that was it. They shut down, and you know, they were just making sure that they got through the remainder of the game relatively unscathed, so that they've got 2 months to enjoy their off season.
Yeah. And look, obviously, as a result of this game, Riverboat Ron has lost his position as head coach with the Commanders. I mean, they have a new owner. They're going to go in a new direction. They're going to try and rebuild the franchise. Hopefully they'll sort out their
stadium,
their facilities. You know, hopefully they'll have running water in the toilets and hot shower for next season.
Yep. I mean, it's a bit sad for Riverboat Ron, because obviously, you know, his whole tenure there has been, you know, he's been hamstrung by Snyder. He played that first, or he coached that first season suffering from cancer as well. He was having the chemotherapy and all that. You know, and it's really all sort of tailed off this year, because, you know, if you think about it, up until I think it was about week 16 last year, he was still, the Commanders were still in the playoff hunt. We could have potentially had all four teams going to the playoffs last year. And then he obviously didn't get the memo about what the playoff implications of one game. And it wasn't until the reporter in the press conference after the game said, you realise you've just thrown away the playoffs there, you know, and he didn't know that. So, but, you know, this year, I think he was kept on purely from the point that it was stability for the new ownership team coming in. And, you know, it was all, unless he'd taken them to, you know, the Mecca, then, you know, there was probably no chance that he was coming back anyway. He really was a dead man walking, as you say.
And if you look at what they also did during the year, obviously they traded away multiple players. I think Montez Sweat ended up as the top sacks with both the Commanders and the Bears this year. Yep. You know, they've got an extra second round pick for him in the upcoming draft. Like, they have tried to be a little bit creative in what they've done. Like, they have kind of asset stripped it a little bit. What if the second or third pick gone into this draft, so that they should be able to draft a quarterback of the future if they want one, if they don't think Howell is their guy?
Well, I could quite easily see that, you know, the quarterbacks are going to go 1, 2, 3 this draft. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, if they don't want one, trade down, pick up another couple of picks as well, and you're laughing. If you look at what Houston got for one of their picks last year, you know, and or no, it wasn't Houston. If you see what Houston actually gave up to get back into the number three pick last year, you know, it's a bounty that you're giving up. So,
do you really see the Bears picking an our quarterback at number one? I could see them trading back.
No, they're
I could as well, but I mean, the one thing that's been said to them years, you've got to keep an open mind, because can you see Justin Fields is obviously going to be coming up for a contract in the next year or so.
I actually had a pretty all right season, to be fair.
Well, he has, but I mean, again, there's been injuries where he's been off as well. As you say, the running quarterback, Paul.
That's true.
You know, his career is going to be shortened. You know, do you want to risk him going down next season and you're back to square one again, or do you want to go with a quarterback, potentially have him ride the bench a bit like Jordan Love has been? You know, and then a year and a half down the line or whatever, you part company with Fields. And you're ready to go with this guy or whatever. So just keep an open mind, because again, the Bears have something like two number one picks in this draft as well.
Yeah, so they currently have the first overall pick and the ninth overall pick.
Yep.
So they have flexibility, and I think they might have a couple of seconds as well. They've been a team that, again, they've been creative. They've traded away pieces, got other pieces in, so I would assume they'll be active. But I mean, I think in all honesty, this is going to be a very strange off season with the quarterbacks, because there's going to be quarterbacks moving on. There's going to be teams who are quarterback needy. Like, I mean, obviously Russ isn't going to be still in Denver next season. We don't know what's happening with the Patriots. As you say, the Bears are another team. The Commanders, like, everywhere is going to be just a bit up in the air with quarterbacks. If you don't have a franchise one, you know, it could be time to move on.
Yep.
And I think just
remember, we've got Trey Lance on our roster as well, and you know, ultimately at some point we will be moving on from him as well, and looking to get something in return for it. Now, obviously. You know, Paul spoke to Dak and Trey's quarterback coach when we were out in Dallas.
Yeah, two live, Craig. Yep.
Yep. So we'll see how the work that he's been putting on with these guys is going. But potentially, you know, that's another trade that Jerry's got in the books as well at some point this next 10 to 18 months or so.
Or maybe they are kind of going, look, it maybe is time to pass on Cooper Rush and just see what they have with Lance. But I think you're right in terms of just it would create a bit of a circus that's unneeded to keep him around.
Yep.
But as I say, again, look, flicking back to over to the the offensive side of the ball, you know, again, CD had a CD game, but Brandon Cooks had a great game on Saturday. I think
he did.
I think he caught all of his targets. He got in for a touchdown again.
And he was six for eight.
Yeah,
six for eight. Bad, Brian. Sorry.
Yeah,
For 59 yards, one touchdown. Long as was 15 yards, so it was a good day in the office for Cooks.
Yeah.
Yep. And he's another one that must have gone into McCarthy as well and said, "Look, I'm not. You brought me in to be a number two, and at that point in time, you know, we'd had the game where Michael Gallup had been thrown to five or six times and only made one reception. And you're sort of going, well, what am I doing here? I'm playing decoy all the time. And since then, you know, having Cook's ascendance as well has meant that, you know, teams couldn't just settle on doubling CD Lamb because Cook's was going to burn them as well. And if you think in the Bills game might have been completely different if on that first drive we'd managed to connect with Cooks, but Dak overthrew him by about a yard or so. And that was probably more due to the weather conditions that, you know, Cooks probably slipped on the turf a little bit. But you know, Cooks has certainly come on, and you know, I think this is what is fifth straight game or something like that with a touchdown. So he's certainly becoming a weapon for this offense. So
yeah. And it would be remiss of us not to also mention Rico Dowdle in this weekend's game.
Absolutely. I mean, can we talk about his pass block, the lowering the shoulder down on the linebacker? That was absolutely beautiful. Beautiful. That's the running back type of pass protection that we've been looking for, is that. So we know Dowdle can do it.
Yep.
Yeah.
And again, to be fair to Tony Pollard, Tony Pollard's shown improvement in that this year as well. This entire running back crew have actually done a relatively good job of you know, blitz pickups. Which was a concern when you were letting Zeke out of the building. There was a concern with that, but you know, it's certainly been assuaged, you know, this season that they've picked up the slack. So,
yeah, for sure. I mean, again, look, DJ Dogs comment in here. Obviously, look, CD has had 135 catches, over 1,700 yards. I think he's probably had 300 yards in the run game as well. He's had 10, 11 touchdowns this season?
I think it's 12 touchdowns.
Yeah, 12.
Receiving, 12 receiving, two rushing. And I think it's 120 yards he's had on the ground. So I think combined he was... combined, he was certainly ahead of Tyreek Hill,
and
second only to McCaffrey.
Yeah.
But if he'd been a feature of this offense from the get go, you know, you're probably talking that this would have rivaled sort of Aaron Rodgers on the Green Bay Packers, you know, in the sort of heyday there where Rodgers was chucking four or five touchdowns a game sort of thing. So
In terms just looking in terms again, and this is more just kind of looking towards next weekend's game, and we're not going to get into that too much, but I mean the numbers in terms of third down efficiency, red zone efficiency, they were right back up. The penalties were down. There was only two penalties for 20 yards. I mean, they did play a cleaner game of football, which is what we wanted from them heading into the playoffs.
Yep. And we're still waiting to see a Micah Parsons holding penalty, because that's 11 games now that we've gone without a Micah Parsons holding penalty. It is absolutely incredible. And again, you were seeing Micah Parsons practically getting
manhandled,
and you know, a lot of the things that were happening, you could quite easily, if that happened in the high street, you'd be having them taken down the cop shop, you know. So,
facts.
Yeah. But if we flip it over in terms of the defensive side of the ball, and look, it was an end of season game, as much as anything. And, you know, apart, as we said earlier, apart from the return block field goal, the turnover on the interception, like, this defense didn't allow the Commanders to get into this game and get going at all.
Yeah, completely. I mean, they took it to them, as you say, short fields with the turnovers. There was nothing else there for the Commanders, and you know, four takedowns of Sam Howell. Mm-hmm. You had the block punt as well. So special teams were getting involved as well, and you know, everything was happening. And again, I see the headline on DallasCowboys.com where Dan Quinn said he's just sharpening the defensive axe before going into the playoffs, and it certainly looked like that. You had a bit of a scare there with Gilmore going down, but he's supposedly ready to play, should be able to play this week. So thankfully it popped the separated shoulder, but they were able to pop it straight back in, and he's not torn anything. So it's just, again, it's pain management more than anything else. So,
And of course, there were also the two interceptions. I mean, I'm just pissed off Deron Bland didn't house another interception.
Oh, come on, Brian. He's leading the NFL. He's leading in picks. He's leading in the interceptions. What more can you want from the guy?
I want to see them all going back to the house.
I know, but just think, I put out a tweet when Bland got his ninth. If he got another two, that would have tied Everson Walls and Trayvon Diggs, and you know, there'd be all that. Somebody on, I think it was Storyline Today, Cowboys Storyline Today, said that, or no, it was Bland was on the Cowboys Hour last night, and somebody had one of the guests sort of said, "You realize you've got 17 interceptions over 2 years or something like that, and Diggs has got 14 or whatever, so there's you know, this is going to be a hell of a secondary next season." And sure enough, it's you know, if we continue with this and there's no change in coaching staff or whatever, then you know, this is going to be a great defense next year as well. So but we've still got at least one more game left to play.
Yes, one, hopefully many more. But look, as I say, we did get comments in earlier, which there's our own Graham.
Lebowski, I need to ask you a question. Are you going to the Packers game with your dad? please answer that question, because we need to know.
Please respond. But these comments did come in earlier, and I did want to go back to them. Mark Anthony, let's address the elephant in the room. How in the hell is DeMarcus Lawrence not a Pro Bowler? He's by far the most underrated player in the league this year. And then, of course, Lindoria came in over the top on that one. Tank has been a beast this year. So many clutch run stops on third and fourth down and short. You know, I mean, gentlemen, discuss.
I think what I'd say is that, you know, a lot of people when they're doing their Pro Bowl selections and you've got to pick six or whatever, they'll order it by sacks. And unfortunately, you know, this has been a down year for DeMarcus Lawrence in terms of sacks. But, you know, they do, the there's nothing for tackles for loss or anything like that. So...
So LaMarcus says, of course, I wouldn't miss some quality time with my dad. Because it's quite a coincidence, like, sorry to interrupt you there, Lauren, but it's quite a coincidence, LaBarca, because Graham, our very own Graham and his dad, who's a Packers fan, funny enough, are going to the game. They're flying out on Friday. We're just wondering if that might be you.
So the question really is, Lebarski's dad a Packers fan?
Yeah, that's the question. He's about to out himself here in a wee second.
Yeah.
But go on ahead, Lord.
Yeah, if tackles for loss came up as one of those stats that they were presenting on the headline stats for them, then, you know, maybe that would garner a bit more knowledge because, I mean, certainly DeMarcus Ware has been an absolute beast. You only have to look at the game... against Detroit, and you know, DeMarcus Lawrence was constantly in the. We're still no further forward. We need Graham to have a. You know, if Lebarski's at the stadium, we need Lebarski to find Graham, and we need photos side by side of them. You know.
Yeah. I mean, Lebarski, you are getting the one wish that you have wanted for years. You're getting Grahamy in Dallas. He is going to be at the game on Sunday with the great Sir Ian of Wilson. So we need to see some photographic evidence of the two of you together.
Yep.
But go on ahead to finish discussing DeMarcus Lawrence there, Lauren.
Yeah, so DeMarcus Lawrence has been on a tear. You only have to look at the Detroit game, the number of times that Montgomery was given the ball, Gibbs was given the ball, and the first thing he sees just as he's about to make a cut is DeMarcus Lawrence standing over him like that going, get down, you know. So yeah. DeMarcus Lawrence has been an absolute beast this year, but not on the stats that the layman goes and picks. He probably scored quite well with the players' votes, the coaches' votes, but
yeah.
You know, ultimately, it's not be. And you know, it's not what it is. Ultimately, we don't want any of our players playing in the Pro Bowl.
Exactly. I mean, that's Paul. That's the one constant thing you always say. We don't want our guys in the Pro Bowl at all. We don't care about the Pro Bowl.
Couldn't care less.
Yeah, for sure.
I mean, it's cool entertainment the week before the Super Bowl, aye, but I'd rather see our players actually being in the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
And I think any fan would prefer that themselves.
Yeah.
It's an honour to be recognised that you're of a good achievement of the season, but the job doesn't stop till you get to that Super Bowl. Unless you're actually out, then by all means, do whatever the hell you want. But if we're still in the race for the NFC Championship and going towards the Super Bowl, I do not want any players going to the Pro Bowl.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And yeah. I mean, quite frankly, for me, the mark of a good player is if you get onto one of the All-Pro teams that's voted for by the press. And I think there's probably a better shot of him getting recognition there for first or second team All-Pro. Than what the Pro Bowl is. So.
Yeah. And that's the thing. Going back, I think this has gone back 6 or 7 years. I think it was before we were doing the podcast. But, I mean, Sean Lee wasn't recognised in the Pro Bowl, but was a first-team All-Pro linebacker. You know, so, I mean, I think being an All-Pro counts more in my opinion anyway, but I don't know about you, gents. Lebarski has come back into us and he said he will be beside himself on Sunday at the game. And he's also said he doesn't like the Pro Bowl, which is great, which is good to know. just kind of, as I say, you can see the stats there that are rolling through. Like, we restricted the Commanders, and look, we know it was a game that they weren't playing for anything, but I mean, they did show up in that first quarter. But I mean, they had 12 first downs, they were 2 of 10 on third down. They did go 3 of 4 on fourth down. But, you know, it just ultimately wasn't good enough. They weren't coordinated enough, and they have a lot of holes to fix heading into 2024 for themselves.
Yeah, I mean, anytime you hold a hold a team to under 200 yards, you know, that shows that your defense has done a job on them. You know, they're in a state. Washington, I mean, a lot of the veterans had said that they were, you know, they were packing up for the season anyway. Again, this isn't to cheapen this victory or anything like that, mm-hmm. but you know, they were in a state of flux. They were playing young players, trying to see what they've got as well, if nothing else, so that you've got something on tape, so that the new coaching staff comes in, knows what they've got, and they can go from there. But you know, essentially, after Reed got on top, I think, you know, they were just mailing it in.
Yeah, pretty much. Tim, I'm just going to pull up your comment here. I'm not 100% sure if you want to provide us a little bit more context. The NFL has been asked to investigate, I heard, but has done nothing. So I'm not sure what that's about, but if you want to come back to us on it. So without getting too much into the game on Sunday against the Packers, there have been a few comments that have come in, but, you know, can ask you guys your opinion. The Packers game is a revenge / prove it game for McCarthy and our vets from 14 and 16 and Tyron, Zach, etc. I'm expecting a solid performance from our boys. And there's another comment I just want to pull up, so just give me a sec, bear with me. Yeah, also from Tim, he said, if we lose this week, does Quinn get McCarthy's job?
No, I think, you know, obviously Jerry was asked about it after the game, you know, in his meeting with the press while all the players are getting changed and they're waiting to go into the locker room. And Jerry was a little bit vague, but he's gone on 105.3 today and said that, you know, the whole thing of Mike McCarthy being 12-5 for the last 3 years, that stability, that is what he was looking for, rather than 8-8, 4-12, 12-4, 8-8, 8-8, you know, under Jason Garrett. What you want to be doing, once you're in the playoffs, anything can happen in the playoffs. And, you know, just getting to the playoffs means that one of these years, something's bound to go right for you. And you're slowly building a core team that have experience in the playoffs as well, so they know the potential pitfalls that you have, and you get better and stronger that way. There is no guarantee that, as I say, if Dan Quinn takes on this job, is it the right place for him as a head coach? You look at Bill Belichick now. Okay, he's on his way out in New England at some point. But you know, since the Cleveland job for him obviously wasn't right, the New England job has been right. Whether it's the coming together of him and Tom Brady all at once, but you know, sometimes the situation's not right for you, and if you're almost gifted it, you're promoted from within. Yeah. It's sometimes a poison chalice as well. So I think, you know, unless we absolutely get hammered in a playoff game, I can't see Mike McCarthy not being back next season.
Yeah. Paul, I'll come to you on that other point that Lindoria kind of asked us. in terms of, is it a revenge slash prove it game for McCarthy and her vets from 2014 and 2016?
Absolutely. I mean, this is the same team that put us out in the playoffs a couple of years ago under Aaron Rodgers. If it wasn't to, I can't remember if it was to Davante Adams or it was to someone else. I think it may have been the tight end at the time.
Yeah, it was the tight end. Richard Rodgers, I think.
That's the one. Rodgers, that's the one. One off the sideline. But, yeah, this game, this Packers team is definitely not the team they were. They've had those struggles. Offensively, like, don't get me wrong, Jordan Love's had a all right start to his career, like, as a starter now. He's looked not too bad, but he is not Aaron Rodgers by any means at all. Nope. And I think this is going to be a completely different game, and I am willing to put some money on this that the Cowboys are going to go out there and send a statement in this game.
Yeah, I mean, the Packers are coming in as one of the youngest teams in the league. I mean, if you look at their receiving core, they're all first and second year receivers.
Yeah.
Jordan Love is obviously, he's sat behind Aaron Rodgers for a couple of years now, and this is his first year as the starter. Everything about this team says that they're young, and they don't have the experience. They'll be a force in a couple of years. Hopefully Jordan Love is more Brett Favre against us than he is Aaron Rodgers against us, and we get back to winning ways as well. But I think this weekend, without nailing my colours to the mast at the moment, I think this should be an easy win for us.
Yeah. Just a couple of comments in there. So Lebarski said, and he's correct, it was Jared Cook that pass was to Austin Richard Rodgers. You're 100% correct, Lebarski. He's also come back in and said, we gave Christian Watson his jump start last season. We did. And then Joe has come back and said, I don't agree if we lose Sunday McCarthy. He says he doesn't agree. He says if we lose Sunday, McCarthy needs to be fired if the offense struggles. I wouldn't agree with that, given, as you guys have said, consistency. But, you know, look, you do have a point as well, though, Joe. We definitely can see that.
I think if the offense struggles, Jerry still needs to not make any rash decision. He needs to go away and think about things, because, you know, McCarthy put it all on himself this year by letting Kellen Moore go off to Los Angeles. I was about to say San Diego again, but never mind. But, you know, it's responded. We've got the number one offense in the league this year. You know, and that just shows that, you know, McCarthy still has it within him. Yes, there's the odd brain fart when it comes to play call or time management, game management, that sort of thing. But, you know, this offense has certainly responded this year. And it's, for me, we've made the right move. And again, I'd be upset if we went out early in this playoff run. But, you know, I still think McCarthy's got it.
Yeah. So, as always, it would be remiss of us to not discuss special teams before we get out of here. Brandon Aubrey, unfortunately, did not go and have the perfect season. He had a blocked field goal, and he also had a second field goal which hit the upright and stayed out. But he did correct himself in the fourth quarter and converted from 33 yards. And I think we all kind of said this in the group chat, that we were quite happy that he got that out of the way and it's now no longer hanging over.
Yeah. And again, the one thing you have to say as well is if you look back to the opening kickoff where the ball came off the tee a couple of times, you know, that shows what the wind was like in that stadium. And, you know, anything could happen. And the fact that he actually doinked it off the crossbar, or off the upright, yeah, suggests that, you know, it was still going to be relatively on target if the wind hadn't caught it or whatever. Mm-hmm. And, you know, to then come back and have another chance and actually nail it from 50 yards as well.
Yeah.
I don't think we've got the same problem as last year, where if you remember, Maher's problem started in Washington. And then obviously he went to Tampa Bay and had a nightmare. And you know, that's one thing you've got to think, is that Jake Elliott is going to Tampa Bay for the Eagles, and you know, again, they've had two bowl games and numerous football games on that field, so the turf will be just bad this year. So
Joe is saying I'd rather he misses now instead of in the playoffs, which is good to hear. And Lebarski is also saying, he says, hopefully Bones made Sam Williams rewatch Peyton Hendershot 100 times. I think it was Hendershot blocked the punt, wasn't it?
It was. But if you actually saw Hendershot, actually, he wasn't as off the ground as Sam Williams was, but he was still off the ground and more horizontal, more if nothing else. But yeah, down on the foot and block the punt that way. So
yeah, for sure. Brian Anger shouldn't have left Dallas at all. He didn't see any action in the game other than holding the kicks for Brandon Aubrey. But I just want to go back up here. Tim did give me a little bit of context there on this point.
Yep.
So he said here, the NFL has been asked to investigate right here, but has done nothing. So this is in relation to the holds against Micah.
Yep.
Yeah. So that is definitely something to pay attention to. Lebarski again has said, look, it's really smart of McCarthy to get Aubrey that last kick. And he's also said Anger did make a touchdown saving tackle because it was him that was responsible for the tackle on the blocked field goal.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So Brian Anger did contribute to the game. But gentlemen, look, it's an hour and 15 minutes. Is there anything else you would like to discuss about the Cowboys game before we start having a little bit of fun?
I mean, not to put it in the end of the note, there was an incident at the game where a fan got sucker punched.
I did see that earlier in the comments.
Yeah, I've seen the video, and it's actually among, remember Cowboy Joe Boo?
Yeah.
But, yep. It was among his group, and someone basically just walked towards one of his friends and just sucker punched him. So I thought that was absolutely just like, why are you upset for being the number two seed? That's all I've got to say.
Yeah.
But also the sucker punch is really terrible. But other than that, can we just laugh at the Eagles again?
Yep. So I'm going to give the first word to this on Lebarski. He said, how are they doing?
They're doing fine. They're doing this. I mean, look at them. They're at home.
Yep.
In the dumpster where they belong.
I mean, that is a real spectacular come down. That, you know, there's the one thing I think Mike posted where, if you go back to week 13, I think it was, that, you know, they had a 93% chance of getting the NFC East Championship.
Yeah.
And they go, what is it, 1-6 over the last, 1-6 over the last,
1-5.
Yeah, 1-5 over the last six games. And, you know, But I mean, as we were saying all season long, they won games by less than a touchdown, where we were blowing similar teams out. You know, but they were getting all the plaudits for being plucky and, you know, doing what it took to win and all that sort of stuff. And we were getting, you know, when we were getting beat by the 49ers, they were taking that out on us. When we got beat by the Cardinals, they had a good laugh at us. And
they're not laughing now.
They're not laughing now, no. And they lost to the Jets as well. So
they have been very quiet in recent weeks.
Yeah. Some of their social media accounts were just this, oh, you're finally stepping up to the plate and having a voice of comedy. And was like that. And I was just, well, yeah, like you're dishing it out to us, we're dishing it back to you. So,
yep.
So sorry for as the infamous Jamie Vardy of Leicester City normal says, chat shit, get banged.
That is for sure. But we do have comments in there from Lebarski and from DJ Dog, both wondering how Shady McCoy is doing these days.
Probably hiding right behind Joy Taylor's backside, no doubt.
But kind of going back to the topic, it does seem to be a thing. I think a lot of the media are starting to turn against them now. I mean, I had Red Zone on Sunday night, and they went for a tush push at one point, and whoever was commentating on their game was more than a little bit peed off about that, saying that it doesn't really have a place in American football at all.
Wow.
Yeah.
Very interesting point here from Lebarski. So Lebarski says their last touchdown saved them from having a negative points differential for the whole season. That tells you all you need to know. They're bad.
Wow. And they were what, a 10-1 team?
10-1.
And they're now what, 11-6?
11-6.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Big shout to Lebarski with that start like this.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, I don't think we've ever seen a team heading into the playoffs with this many questions over them. In terms of, like, there's talk, like, obviously they changed their defensive coordinator mid-season and brought Matt Patricia in, or Matt Patricia was there and they promoted him. There's been talk that they need to change their offensive coordinator. There's talk that their head coach needs to be sacked.
That would be great. I mean,
I know, you want him around.
I just don't want to see his face anymore. I'm sick of it.
Gives you a reason to hate them even more,
I guess.
You think that Jonathan Gannon, the Cardinals head coach, was made the scapegoat for them losing the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
And, you know, he got his revenge on them last week. You got to love that. You know, by all accounts, AJ Brown obviously has gone down for with that injury there, but he's being a cancer in the locker room. He's getting back to, you know, being the petulant child and, you know, saying, no, you know, you've gone away from me.
Yeah.
You know, I said earlier that, you know, CD Lamb didn't go on the press or anything like that, saying, oh, I'm not getting the ball. He went and sat down with Mike McCarthy. He did it the right way. AJ Brown, by all accounts, is splitting that locker room. There's arguments going on in that locker room, you know, during practice time, not even post game or anything like that. So, they are a fractured team at the moment. So,
was it on Twitter or was it on Instagram last week that he posted if things didn't improve that he'd be in Dallas next year?
Yeah,
playing with Dak. No chance. Nah.
Not a chance.
Not going to happen. But, I mean, you kind of mentioned Jonathan Gannon there and what he's done with the Arizona Cardinals this year. And, I mean, Shane Steichen, who was their offensive coordinator last year, is in the running for coach of the year, head coach of the year, after what he did with Indianapolis. So, I mean, is it a case of last year's performances were more down to the work of their coordinators in Shane Steichen and Jonathan Gannon than their head coach?
Oh, I certainly think so. I mean, you know, the head coach is only responsible when you get to that level. You're more of an overseer of things. Yeah. You're walking around. You're organizing when practices are on. You're in the case of Mike McCarthy, you're recording the Mike McCarthy show for going out on your team's media page. You're talking to the radio stations, all that sort of stuff. You're talking to the press every day. You're not really getting involved with the players as such, to the degree that the coordinators are. And it's part of this reason is why teams can fracture is that you only have to go back to who was it, Jerry Glanville and Buddy Ryan and what have you, where they had the punch ups or Mike Ditka and Buddy Ryan, they certainly that year the Bears went to the Super Bowl. That was a fracture. And then you have a look this year as well that with the Giants. Obviously, Wink Martindale's resigned today as well. That was you saw in the games where Wink Martindale and Daboll were having shouting matches at each other. Mm-hmm. You knew that was probably going to be a separation at the end of this season. And I think the final straw for him was that they'd fired a couple of the position coaches on the defense. So I think offensive and defensive coordinators probably do more with the players themselves than anything the head coach actually does.
So, and sorry, just we have had a couple of other comments in here. So Lindori has said to us, I don't know, guys, having CD as a possession receiver and AJ as a big play guy with Dak at the helm would be insane. I mean, I think it's a fair point.
It is. I mean, yeah, but if he's going to act like that, then you don't want him anywhere near the locker room. Especially if this is a team in the ascendancy and on the rise, and if we do get to where we want to be this year, then then coming in, great. All the guys are still wanting to play and all this sort of stuff and go and repeat and everything like that. And you bring somebody in who just upsets the apple cart. And remember, you've got Cooks for another year at least. So he's a lot cheaper than AJ Brown.
Lebarski is agreeing with you there 100%, Lauren. And he raised the point, and both of you did mention this earlier in the show. It's another point to McCarthy. Not only could CD go to him, but he listened. And I mean, you guys said it. CD went to him and talked about it. He listened. Dak went to him, talked to him. He listened. Brandon Cooks went and talked. And I mean, that's, as you guys kind of say, the head coach's role is not to coach the players. It's to be a man manager. It's to facilitate everything around the players. It's more of a CEO role. It's not a managerial role, and that is the thing, as you say, it's the coordinators who are closer with them. And DJ Dog has kind of said here, I have concerns about getting that team stink in our locker room. Absolutely, I wouldn't want them anywhere near us at all. And Tim is saying that their own podcasters have just been ripping them asunder since Sunday.
Let me guess, Mr. Lord Brunson, let me guess. he went off, and it was fantastic. I was enjoying my Eagles tears way too much watching that.
I don't. How was that bottle of tears on Sunday night?
Simply the best.
Yep.
So look, gentlemen, we're nearly an hour and a half in, so it's time for us to get out of here. Is there anything else you guys want to discuss before we get out of here?
I'm all good, I'm just ready for the playoffs now.
Yep. Regular season's over, big boys come out to play now.
Absolutely. Paul, do you want to give the shout out?
Of course. Yes, guys, if you are planning on to a Dallas Cowboys game next season, be sure to go and contact CowboysExperience.com for game tickets, stadium tours, meet and greets, and much, much more.
And Lauren, what do you do?
Make sure you say that UK Cowboy sent us, put that in the promo code, and you'll get some free stuff as well. And chocolate pudding.
Absolutely.
I'm actually, I don't know if it's just me, but I'm can we ditch the chocolate pudding now? I think that joke's past its sell by date.
Yeah, okay. New season, new jokes.
We get the rest of these out of it, and then we'll get a new one for Rich.
We've definitely strung that one way too long. I think even Rich is just like that.
Joe is staying here. He said, "I'm ready to give the Green Bay Packers a 40 burger with cheese on it."
I like that one. That's a good one, Joe. I like that.
We'll give you comment of the night with that one, Joe. But of course, look, gentlemen, it has been a pleasure as always. Make sure you tune in here 9 o'clock on Thursday night here in the UK and Ireland, 4 o'clock on the East Coast of America, 3 o'clock Central Time, and 1 p.m. on the West Coast of America. And also just make sure you tune in on YouTube. Our Facebook page is down at the minute. So tune in on YouTube or Twitter or wherever you get your podcasts. And I will pass it off. It's a good night from me, gentlemen.
You know what I'm going to say, and I'm very happy to say this one for once more. Dallas forever, Philly forever.
Cry, Eagles, cry.